bathroom exclaiming,
"Does anyone have an extra tampon?"
You can save the day and maybe make a new friend. Even if you never see her again, you'll be her knight in shining tampon, and she'll tell the story at her anniversary parties forever.
In all seriousness, why period parties are serious business. I'm lucky to have my mom for so many reasons. I know this, and she knows this, and she knows I know this. And the period party was just one of them. When I was younger, I thought of ye old pee-pee as something silly that she'd done to keep me from being embarrassed about my body and to make me and my friends giggle. It wasn't until I got older that I fully realized the cultural significance of what she'd done. For so many women around the world, having a period is nothing to giggle about. They're not even embarrassed about it. They're downright shamed. Thanks to my mom's gift basket, when I started my period, I had a whole smorgasbord of feminine products at my disposal. So if my virgin vagina and I opted for a pads-only lifestyle, that was on us. For many girls in developing countries, though, there's no choice about it. They'll use what's available, leaves, socks, etc., if anything's available at all. Many, especially displaced women living in refugee camps, don't even have access to private bathrooms where they can manage their periods in peace. Just like my mom when she started, if girls don't have the right information about what is happening to them, they might not even know periods exist until they get theirs. And again, just like my mom, they find blood in their underwear and they think they're dying or seriously ill. Over the past few years, many activists and relief organizations have worked to bring some of these issues out of the girls' room, or lack thereof, and turned menstruation awareness into a global campaign. Once again, my mama was ahead of her time. We can all start making things better for women around the world by breaking the taboo at home. Just talk about your period, or your daughters, or your sisters, or your nieces, or your granddaughters, everybody. Like it's no big, bad friggin' deal. 'Cause really, it's bloody not. Ways to break the bloody taboo.
Start early.
If your daughter finds your pads or tampons and asks about them, don't start stuttering and say that they're for getting the bathtub grout extra clean. Tell her for real what the heck they're for.
Don't treat periods as a girl's only issue.
If your son finds your pads or tampons and asks about them, do the same damn thing and tell him what the heck they're for.
Well, Timmy.
Put tampons on the grocery list.
Don't be embarrassed to ask your husband or boyfriend to buy your supplies. Households need toilet paper and dish soap. Households with women need pads and tampons, or menstrual cups if you're brave, baby. And there is no shame in that game.
Your period is not just your problem.
One, a period is natural and is not a problem, though it can cause problems. Two, if you're having sex with a man, then your period is something that affects both of you. If you're trying for a baby, he'll need to know about your period cycle. If you're not, he should be wrapping his friend up and also thanking the Crimson Wave gods every time your flow, well, flows.
There is one major period taboo.
Never, ever make fun of anyone who has had an accident. There is definitely a special place in hell no, now that was not nice and you know it, for people who see someone bleeding through her pants and decide to point, laugh, or not tell her she is a leakin'. Chapter 5, 8 Words to Watch Out For. Oh gosh, you have not experienced a sex talk until you have had one from my mama. She is more raw than a dripping, bloody, grass-fed, ruby-red ribeye in the kitchen at Outback Steakhouse. Body carts, body secretions, and body gyrations. Oh, she's gonna cover it all. She gave me the talk. The real talk. When I was 13. And at that time, I felt like she was being gross for grossness' sake. I gotta admit, though, the rawness worked.
Because while many of my buddies were squirming in the sheets and doing all kinds of uncensored lip and hip play with boys they weren't even sure they even liked, I was only squirming in my seat from embarrassment at my mama's lack of lip censorship. When I finally did decide to get down and dirty a few, actually more than a few, years later, I remembered everything that my mama had said. Even if I didn't follow her advice 100% my first time, at least I knew what I was supposed to be doing, or more like not doing, and she was in my head the whole time. Sounds weird, right? But it wasn't as creepy as it sounds. It was actually kind of comforting.
When Tyra turned 11, we flew and buzzed through the birds and bees talk. That was easy, simple. It wasn't much more than my baby girl had already heard from sex ed anyway. So it didn't take much longer than 15 minutes. This goes there, that goes here, then there's some action, and all that makes a baby. Easy, done, moving on. As a mama, I was happy to check that box. I had done my duty. Cut to the eve of Tyra's 13th birthday, and I start to think we might need to revisit this little biology lesson. We're fighting over the last slice of barbecue chicken pizza at California Pizza Kitchen. Tyra has an extra side of barbecue sauce she's dipping every bite in, and I have ranch dressing and am doing the same. One too many times, I overheard Tyra, her best bud Kenya, and her other friends talking quite colorfully about relations. The sheer stupidity that these little girls and boys would spout about love, sex, and lovemaking was making me cringe.
You can tell if a guy has VD because he has a crazy look in his face.
What?
I heard that if you stand on your head after sex, you won't get pregnant.
Oh, no.
You can't get pregnant on your period anyway. That's impossible.
Oh, hell no. You would have thought they were a bunch of sex ed teachers and gynecologists from the way they were so sure of themselves, even though they were wrong about every damn thing. If my baby was hearing all of this nonsense and believing every bit of it, I knew I had to do an intervention stat. But how?
When I was in elementary school, Ma got me one of those Where Did I Come From books. It was my favorite book, full of cartoons about what mommy and daddy had, yeah, down there, and what they did to make a baby. It was pretty edgy for its time. Shoot, most parents of today would blush about that darn book now, but Ma was always 10 steps ahead. Then, when I got a little bit older, she got me one of those teenage body books that talk about everything from pubic hair sprouting to stinky armpits and crotch sweat. None of my friends had moms who even pretended to talk to them about sex, so whenever a group of them came over to my house, first thing they'd want to do was get out the body book. It'd be open on the floor, everyone poring over it like it was nothing they'd ever seen before, even though they all had the parts. And as soon as Ma would open the door or stick her head in, someone would squeal and throw the book under the bed.
You don't have to hide that, I'd always tell them. I bought the damn thing, and I saw what page you were on. Interesting, ain't it?
She loved making them squirm.
Yep, I was real. Yeah. I was wrong. I wanted to make sure my daughter didn't have to move forward blindly like I did. I wanted to have a talk with her, but her being a teenager, I knew she wouldn't want to have a talk with me. I had to figure out how I could have this conversation without Tyra running away with a...
Ma, I've got homework. I've got friends coming over. Ma, it's time for me to go to bed. Mama, we ate all the barbecue chicken pizza, so we have to leave now.
Excuse. How could I get her in a place where she couldn't run and couldn't hide from all the rawness I was desperate to spout? I needed to take her as a hostage of sorts, a legal kidnapping of my own child. The choo-choo sound outside the restaurant window caught my ear and gave me my answer. I'll put her on a train.
Why the heck is my mom telling me we're going to take a train ride? She didn't even give me any notice. I want to spend my 13th birthday with my friends in L.A. at the Beverly Center Mall window shopping at Contempo Casuals and checking out boys who I know will never want my skinny butt. But heck, it doesn't hurt to look at them. But now I'm going to be on a darn choo-choo train with my mom to San Diego? Like I'm a child? Sexy. What the heck is in San Diego anyway besides the zoo? Does my mom really think I want to look at monkeys, alligators, and preschoolers all day? I think San Diego is a port for the Navy or something, so that means that there are a lot of sailors out there and they wear those cute sailor suits. I'm gonna rock a white outfit head to toe so I can look like them. Yeah, I'm skinny and awkward, but they probably have been stuck on a submarine with no chicks for 6 months. Maybe they'll think I'm cute.
I'll never forget Tyra dressed in all white from head to toe. It was as if she had some sixth sense that her mama was going to spill all the dirty and she needed to be as saintly as possible to be able to survive the uninhibited truth attack that was approaching. Tara wasn't thrilled with the idea of a train trip with her mama for her birthday. I knew she'd rather stay home and eat ice cream with her friends.
San Diego? To the zoo? Ma, I'm about to be a teenager. You know the zoo is for babies?
I wanted to tell her that this trip was to prep her for a different kind of wild animal, horny boys, the feral kind she was about to encounter in high school. And speaking of babies, the trip was also to protect her from birthing any too soon. But I held my tongue. I had to get her on that train and needed to make sure we were choo-choo-chooing away before I started that lesson. That way, she couldn't jump off.
It is so obvious my mom wants to talk about sex. Like, duh. I don't know why she is hemming and hawing because usually she just starts spitting out all kinds of stuff other parents never would and with no shame whatsoever. Nervous she is not. Not ever. I bet she wants to ask me if I've done it. Like, it. I haven't even kissed yet. Except my full-length mirror, where I French kiss about once a week in preparation for the first time I kiss a boy. I gotta admit, I look kinda sexy when I'm making out with my mirror. I keep my eyes slightly open so I can see myself, and I turn my head left and right like I see them do in the movies. I kinda make soft breathing noises too. Nothing too freaky, just super soft breaths to make it seem real. My mirror, on the other hand, looks like a teething baby got a hold of it and never let go, slobber running down the glass until it soaks my carpet. Ma's still not broaching the real subject, so as the train rumbles down the tracks, I look out the window. We're sitting across from each other, and all of a sudden, she starts to snort. It's like this half laugh, half sneeze, like she knows something I don't, and she's trying to keep it in. I start craning my neck. What's she laughing at?
The train is picking up speed along with my pulse. How the hell am I going to start this talk off? Where do I begin? It's like a freezing cold swimming pool, I guess. All you can do is hold your nose and jump right in. Still, I can't stop beating around the bush, making things uncomfortable by talking about how they're going to get uncomfortable.
Mama, I don't know what you're saying. You're not making any sense.
She's right. I'm not making a damn bit of sense. I don't know where to begin. This kind of talk would have made my own mama jump off the Golden Gate Bridge into a pit of tarantulas on fire. She rolls her eyes at me and then looks out the window. Right as we rumble by, some horses are going at it and having some very horsey sex. The whole train is watching. Some passenger standing up and crossing to one side to catch a glimpse of the farm action. Before I know it, I'm laughing at the irony and spraying ginger ale straight out of my nose and all over Tyra. Her eyes go wide with disgust, probably half over the fact that her pristine white jeans are now covered with my soda snot and half over the horsing around that's taking place right outside the window. I guess this is my cue, so I take a deep breath and start in. So, Ty, I say, we've talked about the birds and the bees.
Yeah, Ma. I read Where Did I Come From a trillion times. This goes there, that goes here, then there's some action, and all that makes a baby. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, she's an expert now, huh? I shake my head slowly because she doesn't know what she's in for. There is more to sex than here, there, and blah, blah, blah. I point out the window, referencing the horse and around act the whole train just witnessed. If that horse was a man and did what that male horse was doing to that female horse, he'd be up under the jail right now. Now she's starting to squirm. Reality is setting in.
Ma, you're still talking crazy.
Okay, that's it. Enough of me being vague. I decide to start in with the real stuff. And I used to be a medical photographer, so I can get real, real. I start with feelings. But not the kind you think.
I sit there listening to her, and at first, I think she's syndicating. This is what we call it in our family when Ma doesn't exactly know what she's talking about, but she's committed anyway. We started calling it this when I once asked her what it meant when a television show was syndicated.
You know,
she said,
it's popular. It's on reruns. A lot of people watch it.
I sat there listening, knowing she didn't fully know what she was talking about. But she was going to keep on going until she ran out of words.
I want to talk to you about feelings, Ty. How your body feels. A boy will touch you. Put his hands on you. And I have to say, it'll feel good. Your body will respond in ways that you haven't felt before. You may even feel weak. Because as he touches you, caresses you, holds you, you're going to feel like you're floating. He'll say all kinds of things, and you'll feel loved as if he loved every ounce of your being. He will tell you he loves you, and those words will sound so good, and you'll believe him. As your body continues to be caressed and your bra's removed in a way you won't even remember it coming off, he will rub you in places never touched by anyone but your washcloth. As he kisses your neck, he will try to pull your underwear down. You will instinctively put your hand over his and tell him to stop, to leave your underwear alone and in place. He will comply and go back to doing whatever he did before he tried to remove your panties. But 3 minutes later, he will try again. And again, you will tell him to stop. So he stops. But he kisses your neck again, squeezing you in all the places that he's learning second by second excite your body, which then turns on your waterworks, the secretions. And then, right at that moment, he will utter 8 words that every young woman has to watch out for. Can I stick it in a little bit?
Now I know my mom is officially crazy, and I will be forever scarred by those words she just said. Can I stick it in a little bit? Really, Ma? What the hell? Oh, my mom has truly just lost her mind. And she's disgusting. What are you talking about secretions? Talking about vaginas getting wet? Like, what? Yuck! And how boys say certain things that'll make your whole body go weak? Though I'm fake smiling on the outside, my young brain is thinking she's gone buck wild crazy, and the inside of me is going, no, 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 that is not going to happen. This is not how this works. No one's going to talk me into anything.
As the train starts up again and picks up speed, I take a deep breath and inhale the courage of the line in the whiz. Ty, I say, there's no such thing as a little bit. Can I stick it in a little bit? Really means can I stick it in a lot of bit? A whole lot of bit. Like the whole damn thing.
Okay, I now vomit a little in the back of my throat. The train stops at the Carlsbad station, and a woman in a Hawaiian shirt grabs her luggage to get off. As she passes us, she smiles at my mom with that, you're doing the right thing, Mom, look. Okay, hula shirt lady is crazy too. Then right behind her, another woman with purple espadrilles and lipstick that is bleeding so bad it's moments away from entering her nostrils, passes. But this time, there's no knowing smile. She looks at my mom like she just spoon-fed me rat poison. I glare back at her with a smize that can kill. Only I can accuse my mama of insanity.
So how do I know those are the 8 words my baby girl has got to watch out for? From experience. From plain, cold, or hot experience. Tyra's daddy was my high school boyfriend, and we did a lot of heavy petting and making out, but nothing really happened. To be honest, I never quite knew what he was doing and was too scared to ask. But again, nothing was going anywhere. Then, one day, something had indeed gone somewhere, and it hurt. Also, I was shocked. I thought everything just bumped up against each other. I pushed him off me and ran straight to the bathroom, where I saw blood running down my leg. Now, I did know enough to note that this meant I was no longer a virgin. The thought made me nauseated, and I sat right down on the toilet and cried. Needless to say, I never let him poke around down there again. Tyra's daddy and I broke up, and he joined the Air Force. We slowly drifted apart when he was deployed to Vietnam, and I met a Navy man, oh, the irony of San Diego being a naval port, who was much older than me. I was very intimidated by him. He told me, I'm going to teach you how to be a real woman, as if being a real woman meant doing some stuff you didn't understand. I didn't have anyone to tell me any better. So when he said I didn't have to worry about getting pregnant because he was just going to put it in a little bit, I said, okay. Put it in? Shoot, I thought he meant put it in motion. But whoa, did I find out. At first, I thought I had the stomach flu because I kept throwing up every morning. Gosh, I thought, this virus just won't go away.
Warning sign number one.
Then I thought my boobs were having a second growth spurt. All of a sudden, they got a whole lot bigger. Plus, they were so sore and tender.
Warning sign number two.
Maybe I was working out too much, getting too much exercise, because all of a sudden, all I wanted to do was sleep all the time.
Warning sign number three.
All these dizzy spells are probably because I'm either sleeping too much or because I'm throwing up every morning.
Warning sign number four.
No period for 3 months.
Warning sign number.
Damn. Wham, bam, and not even a thank you, ma'am. I'm pregnant. I was not super slender, but at the time, I had a strong athletic build with a six-pack belly that all my friends envied. So even by the time I was 3 months along and had figured out what was going on with me, I wasn't showing at all. It was like my tight abs were pushing the growing baby backward into my organs. After the manic sleepless nights, chronic nail biting, crying like an endless waterfall, thoughts of running away, thoughts of ending it all, I was shaking like a leaf all day, every day. Finally, one late afternoon, I knew I couldn't wait any longer, and I went into my parents' bedroom while my father was at work. I pressed my forehead against my mother's and whispered, "I'm gonna have a baby, Mama." She slowly backed off from me, and under her breath, barely audible, she just kept saying, "No."
No, 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 no.
My heart broke because I had broken hers.
My heart feels like it's ripping apart when I hear my mom talk about what she went through when she was 17. But that was the thing with her whole raw approach. She wasn't trying to shock me or scare me, and she especially wasn't trying to shame me. She was trying to save me. She'd been through hell, and she was just trying to make sure that I didn't have to make that trip way down south, too.
My baby boy meant the world to me, and he's grown up to be one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. He has 3 master's degrees and recently retired as a major after 28 years in the United States Air Force. Overachiever? Yeah. When he was 9 years old, his favorite hobby was reading the World Atlas. Instead of playing video games, he could play the drums, guitar, and piano by ear, and he made the best zucchini bread I'd ever tasted. I'm going to stop myself here because I could brag up and down the block about my little doobie, and I've been known to do it. And he shares my ear-piercing laugh. From the moment he was born, my family overflowed with love for Devin, and I wouldn't trade him or the life we've had together for anything. But not all teen pregnancy stories have a happy ending, and I still think having a child at 17 is way too early for the majority of people. Even if, like me, you always knew you wanted children. Getting pregnant as a teenager was not something I wanted to happen to Tyra. I didn't want it to happen to any girl, for that matter. But you can't go about giving out sex talks to random girls on trains. I didn't want her to get a disease, whether it could be cured with penicillin, staved off with a drug cocktail, or worse, result in death. I didn't want some man kissing her neck and lying to her and saying he loved her, when he really just wanted to feel her loving. So yes, I told my daughter those 8 words, and all other kind of words that men say to get inside a girl's head and other body parts. Now, you're a step ahead, I told him when I finished. You know what they're going to say. So years from now, when you do decide to have sex, you know what you're getting into. You're not naive, and you can give informed consent. You won't say yes to something you don't understand or were tricked into. I made sure our time on that train wasn't all serious, that we had plenty of fun, and that we laughed a lot. Because really, if you can't laugh about an awkward sex talk, what can you laugh about? We ate ice cream. She put her feet up on the seat and I massaged her toes. We talked about the boys she thought were cute at the all-boys school. We kept talking and sharing all the way to San Diego, and the conversation didn't stop even after we got off the train. We kept yapping as we walked around and enjoyed the scenery in the gas lamp quarter. I didn't want her to look back on this conversation as a bad memory, so I was constantly given some sweet sugar with the bitter medicine. It worked, because off the train, she had a chance to run away, but she didn't. There were sailors everywhere, and Tyra kept saying she was just staring at their cool white bell-bottom outfits, but you can't fool Mama. Looks like my 8 words came at the perfect time.
The first kiss. My experiences of the sexual kind were non-existent for about a year after the raw train talk. Then, I touched a boy's privates, through his pants, before I even got my first kiss. It was at the Beverly Center Mall, in the theater, watching Matthew Broderick in Biloxi Blues. The owner of said nether region was Christian Bravo, who went to the all-boys school that was the counterpart to my all-girls school. All the girls had crushes on Christian Bravo. He was fine as hell and had that I care but I don't really care swag that put the rest of the high school boys to shame. There was no way in hell he could ever like my skinny, mini, awkward, and yet to master the smize self. Mr. Bravo paid little Miss Banks no mind. So when he started touching my leg when Matthew Broderick was at basic training, I was like, huh? Soon, we were holding hands, and then he took my hand and went to put it on his knee. I moved at the same time, confusion ensued, and the next thing I knew, my hand had landed right on his crotch. I yanked it back like I had just been burned by a curling iron, and my face was definitely on fire. As soon as the credits started to roll, he leaned over and kissed me. Like I said, I'd practiced a ton with the mirror, but it never kissed back, so this was absolutely, positively slobbery. I didn't know what to do with my own tongue, much less another tongue in my mouth. It felt floppy, gooey, and slimy. I pulled back and I tried to play it cool. You know, Chris, I said, I really don't like kissing that way. As if I had a ton of experience and knew what the other way options were. After the last credit rolled, I was up and out of my theater chair like I'd been shocked. As we walked past the food court and all the music stores selling tapes and this new thing called CDs, I walked fast and 5 mall stores ahead of him all the way to the public RTD bus. I was way too embarrassed to even look at him again, and when the bus pulled up, I sprinted onto it and looked back just long enough to say, bye. And from that moment on, I could never look him in the eye. So we never really talked again. But later that year, he started going out with this girl named Zara, who I had study hall with in the library.
I was jealous of that lucky biatch for years because she probably knew how to kiss. The first makeout. My first boyfriend was Byron Short. My, oh my, he was an adorable green-eyed sweetheart and a good soul. He was 13, I was 13, so you get it, a whole lot of nothing happened, which is exactly what should be happening at 13. Then when I was 15, I fell in what I thought was love with this guy named Vay, who I met at a New Edition Bobby Brown Al B. Shearer concert at the Forum where the L.A. Lakers played. Vay was 18, so not that much older, but old enough that the first time he came to my house, my stepdaddy took one look at him and said, "Your old ass needs to leave right now." Of course, that only made me want Vay even more. I had some freedom thanks to that RTD bus, so I traipsed around town to meet him and hang out. Once we even made out on the roof of a building at the La Brea Tar Pits. The tar pits kind of fart and also emit a smell, but I didn't care. I was in Vay's arms under the stars. Who cared if the air smelled like oil poop? Vay and I also hung out at the mall. Every mall. A lot. He had a job at the Gap, but not in the mall. He worked at what I thought was a super classy Gap in Westwood near the campus of UCLA. So there I was, taking the bus to fancy Westwood to go see him fold t-shirts at work. I thought he was such a businessman because he had a J-O-B, and his folding game was on point. After he'd get off work, we'd be on the phone all night listening to slow jams.
"Ty, who are you talking to?"
"It's nobody, Mama, just Andrea." Then I'd go back to listening to Vay hum Tenderoni to me. So romantic, right? Shoot, it was to me. I thought I was in love, and whenever my parents were gone, they would sneak over and we'd make out, fully clothed, in the living room after school. One day, we were going at it hot and heavy on the couch when he put his mouth to my ear, licked it, then whispered those 8 words. O-M-G. I screamed, I pushed him off me, and I jumped up off that damn couch. "She said you would say that," I yelled. "She's not crazy. You said it just like she said you would." Well, he didn't know what she I was talking about, but he did think I was crazy and that I was trying to cry foul or something. As I was hyperventilating from this surreal moment, my mind kept repeating, "Ma was right. Ma was right. Ma was right." In fact, she was right about everything. I was feeling weak. He'd said sweet nothings in my ear. There were even secretions. Needless to say, Vay and I did not have sex that day. Not even a little bit. And we never did. The first it. When I was about to graduate from high school, I had a boyfriend named Nicholas. He looked like a young Denzel Washington, and I'd met him in Westwood. In those days, all the girls would go to Westwood to just walk around the 5-block radius in circles and try to meet dudes. It worked, and I ended up with a Denzel lookalike. From the get-go, Mama did not like his vibe, but I thought he was so suave. He'd come over after school when Ma was still at work, and we'd spend hours just lying on my bed in my room. Not even making out, just lying there for hours. And he'd stare into my eyes all intently and say sweet nothings to me. Not erotic or anything, just deep, experienced. I was intimidated and exhilarated at the same time. I remember him touching my leg in a way that nobody had ever touched my leg before. I thought, this is different. It was just an innocent touch, but so different from Byron Short's 13-year-old touch, and even from Vay's. And woof, it felt nice. Really nice. Too nice. Tingly. One night, we'd gone to the movies and were making out afterward. After about 30 minutes of kisses that felt like heaven bathed in whipped cream, which is my favorite dessert topping, he said those 8 little words. But I didn't jump up. I didn't scream. I didn't yell, "She said you'd say that!" He didn't catch me off guard. I was prepared. But really, I wasn't. Sex was nothing like the movies. It was painful and awkward, and after, I cried. I waited about 3 days, and then, yep, I knocked on you-know-who's door and said we needed to talk.
She said,
Mommy, I have to tell you something.
And immediately started crying. I knew what was up. Immediately. Baby, I said, what's wrong? Even though I knew. Through her blubbering, all the details came out. She stopped crying long enough to tell me that everything I told her would happen had happened.
Even though I did it,
she said,
I didn't do it in a cloud. I did it because I wanted to.
I listened and comforted her the best I could. She said she had been mentally prepared, so she didn't know why she was crying. I hugged her and dried her tears. And then I told her to get in the car because the next stop was the drugstore to get some condoms. Here's the thing. There are plenty of parents out there who think that abstinence education works for everyone. And that if you tell them not to have sex, they will listen and they won't do it. I wish that was always the case and that everyone listened to the warnings and decided not to have sex until they were married. But if kids want to have sex, it's pretty difficult and at times impossible to stop them. You hear me? I wish we all could, though. Believe me. Rarely can you stop them, but you can arm them. And I armed mine with a pack of Trojans, complete with Nonoxynil 9.
Things men will say to get you to have sex with them. This isn't everything. Add more to our list at perfectisboring.com.
Do it now. You'll be doing a public service.
Here's the list. Come on now, baby.
You're being a baby.
Are you afraid?
Don't be a scaredy cat.
Can I just touch it?
Will you just touch mine?
I promise it won't hurt.
I'll never hurt you.
I just want to feel you close.
I know you want it as much as I do.
Don't be a tease.
Just hold it against you.
If you loved me.
Are you a woman or just a girl?
If we do it, we'll be together forever.
I don't want to do it with anyone but you.
Oh, so you're going to leave me with blue balls?
Susie Q will do it if you won't.
And yes, can I stick it in a little bit? How to handle bad boyfriends.
When it comes to the guy your daughter dates, you're not going to like all of them. In fact, you're probably not going to like most of them. The reason why I didn't like the guy who took my daughter's virginity was because he'd come to my house with nothing to say. He'd never make eye contact, much less conversation. Sometimes he wouldn't even come in the house when he came to pick her up. Instead, he'd honk, honk, and have my daughter running outside to jump in his car. That's a flag for me. You can't look me in the face, and you can't have the most basic of conversations. Then what the heck are you hiding?
My brother goes on a first date on Halloween and then brings them home for Thanksgiving. He loves him some love. Me? I'll wait months, sometimes even more than a year before I introduce someone I'm dating to the family. 'Cause I know if I bring him around too soon, Ma will not be able to hide how she feels and I'll either immediately drop the dude or rebel against her and commit for way too long. Ma can sniff a hot mess, loser, or douche like a pig sniffs out truffles. And ugh, she is always right. Ugh. I dated one guy who was a Shakespearean actor, and I would try to coach him before he'd come over to the house. Come on, I'd say. You're an actor. You can do this. Just look my mom in the face. If you can't look her in the face, she's going to think you're shady. Still, Romeo couldn't do it. Ma would walk in, and he'd suddenly start staring at the floor or get really interested in the remote control. There were also other things wrong with him. Other warning signs, shall we say? He just had a big successful movie come out, but he hadn't booked anything after that, and he wore one pair of beat-up shoes that looked about 101 years old. They were so broken down, the soles were coming loose and flapped as if they were having a conversation with the sidewalk. He also could not afford his own place and was late on the rent he owed the person he was crashing with. Finally, Ma had had enough.
The man doesn't have a job, a car, a phone, shoes without holes, or eye contact, Tyra,
she said.
What else do you need to see to know that you do not need to be with this fool?
My hair and makeup team agreed. Girl, it's the shoes, they said. Even if you didn't know about the no ride and no phone, you should have taken one look at them broke down shoes and gone running, boo. When I finally did kick him to the curb, he filled up my answering machine with Shakespearean sonnets with stuff like, Maiden Banks, thou shalt burn at thy stake for thy heart you hast broketh. I don't know about you, but that don't sound like no Shakespeare I ever read.
Finally, I had to call and quote Shakespearean NWA to Romeo and his crazy sonnet-ass attempts at threatening my baby. Dr. Dre, thanks for the words and beats. See what I did there? That sent that sorry fool running. But that one time aside, I'm not really trying to jump into my kids' relationships. I probably knew that if I told Tyra you shouldn't be with him, you should leave him, she would hold on tighter. No matter who Tyra brought home, I think I was always polite and kept a pleasant smile on my face, even if I knew he was sweating because his butt knew I could see right through him, even if Tyra couldn't. She had one boyfriend who was just talking about himself, talking about himself, talking about himself all the time. It was like there was no other conversation to be had in the room if it didn't pertain to him. I'm thinking, can my daughter not see what's going on here? It's all about him. He's not interested in what you're doing, where you're going, what you ate for breakfast. He made eggs and got stuck talking about how it was the best omelet ever created by humanity. It was just, ugh. All through meals, he just would not stop. I'd leave the room, come back 20 minutes later, and he'd still be talking about himself. One day Tyra said to me,
You don't like him, do you, Mama?
I didn't lie, so I told her, nope, I didn't, and gave her my reasons. These are the traits I see, I said, and this is my personal opinion. If you like him, then you go on and like him. And look on the bright side. He will never run out of things to say about himself. I never tried to change her mind, but I could give her something to think about.
Yep, I remember that dude. He loved him some him. 2 weeks into our dating, we were at dinner one night and I said, I could be anybody sitting here right now. You just need an audience. Ha ha ha, we laughed it off. I didn't pay too much attention to it. Cut to 5 years later and Mama finally yelled,
That mofo is so stuck on himself, I'm sick of him. You're dating him, so you spend time with him. I'm done.
Soon after, when I was going through some very stressful times and would shake and cry in his arms, and he still couldn't have a conversation that did not focus on him, I was done too. Yep, she always knows. Boyfriend red flags and how to recognize them. The man, the heartbreaker.
This was a musician who broke my baby's heart and about 10 other models' hearts. I damn near tied her ass down and said, If you call him, I will disown you. Sit your butt right down here and let's start forgetting about him and his crazy ass antics. I don't care how many Grammys he has. More on him if there's a book number two.
The flag. When you find out he's a serial heart crusher, don't give him the power to continue to break you. He dumped you? Don't chase him like all those other chicks did. Disappear, child. David Copperfield his butt. The man. The mama's boy.
This pretty boy's mama wanted our children to be married after dating for only 3 weeks. She was obsessed with what their future children would look like. I really tried to stay away from Tyra's time with Mr. Gorgeous as much as possible. Yeah, they look cute together, and he had a natural smile, but that was about it.
The flag, A beautiful relationship is between two people, not three. Also, a pretty boy ain't worth his eyelashes if he doesn't also have a pretty personality to back up his angel baby face. The man, the unstable scrub.
Like Tyra said, this actor had no phone, no car, and no job, but plenty of time to leave threatening messages on her answering machine. He must have called from a payphone.
The flag, the man who's always trying to bum a ride, probably isn't going anywhere. The man, the gaslighter.
This strong, strapping man cried to me like he was the victim. Like all his wrongs, compulsive cheating, and other unsavory shenanigans was just because Tyra didn't see how much he loved her. I killed him with kindness until Ty was able to see that she wasn't crazy and put that nonstop soap opera in the past. He was young, restless, and not worth it. I knew I had to treat him nice. Had I told her he was dead wrong and she should run, she would have held on.
The flag. No, you're not crazy. When you smell gasoline, there's a gaslighter in the midst. The man. The narcissist.
This highly successful guy thought the world was a one-man act with an endless monologue about himself.
The flag. If you can't get a word in edgewise, he needs a mirror, not a girlfriend. Chapter 6. We're all rooting for you. What do you do when a girl comes up to you and asks you how to cover a black eye? Specifically, a black eye her boyfriend gave her. Oh, and you've only got 15 seconds to answer. When I did my tour for Tyra's Beauty Inside and Out, a book that talked about all kinds of things like dating, nutrition, and makeup, I even showed my face with and without makeup way before a hashtag woke up like this was the huge thing it is today. I signed my books in Walmart as part of a CoverGirl promotion. You could find me shopping up in Walmart, too. I bought a denim purse there that I carried until it was stained and falling apart. My model buddy, Rebecca Romaine, would always tease me about it. Girl, I love you, but you are crazy, and that purse is disgusting. It's got an ink blot on it. Girls and the occasional guy would stand in line for hours to get their book signed and ask me basic questions. Most were cheerful and bubbly. We'd rap for a few seconds about lip gloss and maybe snap a photo. But I'll never forget the girl who made everything come to a screeching halt, in my mind at least. She couldn't have been more than 16 or 17 years old with curly light brown hair and a smattering of cocoa sprinkles across her nose and cheeks. Her eyes were big and hazel, and one was puffy, bloodshot, swollen, and purpled with bruising. I swear I hadn't heard her right. "I'm sorry, sweetie," I said. "Could you repeat that?" "Well, so like my boyfriend hit me," she said softly, shifting from foot to foot and twirling one of those curls through her fingers. "So now I have this black eye and I need to find a good concealer so that I can cover it up when I go to school." I had heard her right the first time, but I had no idea what to say. I'm sitting there, silent and dumbfounded, and my heart is breaking for this precious girl as she's just smiling at me expectantly. Security comes up. "Time's up. Next." I should have jumped up and yelled to the whole crowd to wait while this girl and I went and found a private aisle and hashed out what was really going on right there, surrounded by laundry detergent and litter boxes and packs of tube socks. But instead, while I was in shock and couldn't think of what to say, she took her signed book back from me and disappeared into the crowd. For the rest of the day, I kept signing like an autograph Roomba, but my mind didn't leave this girl. I was so down on myself. As someone in the public eye, I didn't want to just have fans. I wanted to connect with people and really make a difference in their lives. This girl had obviously come to me because she didn't know where else to go. And then she just slipped through my fingers. I didn't want that to happen again. And I knew I had to do something where I could communicate with these girls in need for longer than the time it took to write L-O-V-E, comma, T-Y-R-A.
Sometimes Tara would talk to a girl for 5 seconds, then worry about her for the next 2 days. Girls would tell her all sorts of things, how their mother's boyfriend hit them in front of their mother, and Mama didn't do anything about it. How a boyfriend had forced her to give him oral sex while his friends were watching. Or how they were afraid to eat lunch at school because the popular girls would walk by their table and call them fat if they saw them so much as take a bite out of an apple. It was crazy.
Mama,
Tara would say,
these girls want to talk to me about extremely personal, deep stuff. It's like they don't have anyone else to talk to.
It would break her heart. And on many occasions, her security team had to stop her from handing out her phone number and address. But far and away, the number one thing she heard over and over again from girls of all races, all socioeconomic levels, all body types, in different places all over the country was, I'm ugly. I'm ugly. I'm ugly. They'd say things like, you're a model, and I'll never be anything like you. I hate how I look, and no one's ever going to want me. My life is horrible, and I know that if I was pretty, then everything would be better. It tore her up.
Mama, these girls think I'm all that because they only see one side,
Tyra said to me one night after a signing.
They only see me after I've been in the glam chair for 3 hours being transformed. They don't see me popping pimples or getting my weave sewn in. They just see me smiling in interviews, unaware that just 10 minutes before you had to pull me out of the bathroom because I was crying over some loser chump. They don't know that there's still a scared, skinny-ass 11-year-old inside me who was once called a monster.
So Tyra decided to swap photo ops for a mountaintop.
I went to Girl Scout camp when I was a kid and loved it. To be fair, I didn't love it all, like how I'd hold my bowels for almost a week because I didn't want to go in those disgusting, fly-infested, rotten-smelling latrines. I was craving to connect with and inspire young girls wearing grubby clothes with rank armpits and twigs in their braids where the only makeup is a layer of bug spray so thick you can scrape it off with your nails. And so, I decided to found a camp of my own. For girls. Yep. Camp. Rough camp. I decided to call it T-Zone. Now, I've never told this to anybody, but I thought of the name as a play on the T in my name, which is obvious, but also as the oily parts of your face, forehead, nose, chin, that are prone to breakouts. I wanted my T-Zone girls to break out of their shells. I believe self-esteem issues span all demos and all neighborhoods, and because I was funding the camp myself, I could choose the campers myself. I found girls from all over the place, from South Central to Beverly Hills, girls of all races and backgrounds, and girls who were straight-A students to ones who were barely staying out of trouble. Later, when we started to get advisors, they put a stop to that. Tyra, I'm sorry, but we're not paying for Becky with the good hair from Bel Air to go to camp for free. But she has problems, too, I protest. Yeah, and her dad can afford a therapist. That first year, my mama and I tried to do most of the prep ourselves. We rented this grubby white van and filled it up at the Price Club with everything we thought a camp full of girls might need. Sanitary napkins, Band-Aids, extra flashlights. As soon as we got to camp, we didn't have any place to store all of our supplies, so we smushed it all into our bunk and spent the rest of the week crawling over paper towels and toilet tissue rolls every time we went to bed.
The bunks we stayed in were full of critters running through the walls, but after the first few nights, we were so tired we became numb to them. All right, rat, opossum, skunk, whatever you are, I think as I crawl into my 2-inch thick mattress, just shut up and go to sleep so we can sleep. T-Zone was one of the most difficult projects I took on the whole time I worked with Tyra. Starting a nonprofit from scratch with no previous experience? Thank God I'm crazy, because a saner mama would have shook her head and walked right back out the room the minute she realized what she was in for. But I believed in T-Zone just as much as Tyra did. From day one, I knew her career wasn't just about her, and we were putting that into practice. T-Zone was as rewarding as it was hard, and the backstage drama of a fashion show ain't got nothing on a summer camp.
everybody was under strict order not to throw away any food in their bunks. All the girls listened. Some of the staff did not. And when a few of them snuck out of camp to go into town to McDonald's once, they tried to hide the evidence, a.k.a. the Big Mac wrappers, in their bunks. Those fragrant wrappers might as well have been a neon sign for an all-night buffet. The staffers woke up to Yogi Bear trying to break down the door, and his roars echoed throughout the camp, waking up everybody. The next morning, that staff's cabin was covered with claw marks.
That's true. Camp food was nothing to write home about. Unless it was just to say it was just plain old nasty.
During the day, typical camp activities made us hot and sweaty and hungry, but nighttime was when the camp really came alive and became T-Zone, where the breakouts would really happen. These were our night talks. We'd sit around the campfire or inside with candles and create a safe, no judgments, not even an eye roll, space to talk about the bigger, serious issues that girls face. I'm obsessed with nicknames, and Ty Ty is mine. But at camp, my baby backs and Kansas City sauce obsessed self was barbecue, or BBQ. And it was mandatory that every girl changed her name once she set foot on T-Zone soil. Fun, new names made everyone feel safe. If I'm calling on a girl and asking her to talk about something really personal, like abuse, and I call her Kamina or Jasmine or Shelby, she might feel self-conscious and not share for fear of being judged. But if I call her Rainbow or Panda or Smiles or whatever she's nicknamed herself, she's reminded that she's in a safe place. I still think this is good advice for moms, parents, friends, teachers, everyone. Just like you know you're about to get a verbal whipping when your mama calls you by your full name, Tyra Lynn Banks, get over here now. A nickname sends the opposite signal, like, don't worry, boo, everything's gonna be all right. Let's talk. Each night I would focus on a different subject, like gender stereotypes, sex and relationships, or body image. What surprised me is that the body image night was the most emotional, and the feeling of, I'm ugly, got real specific. We might as well have just passed out a multiple choice quiz. Question, which body part do you hate the most? A, my boobs. B, my butt. C, my stomach. D, my thighs. E, the whole darn thing. 7 out of 10 girls would have circled E.
Tara came up with something she called the mirror exercise. I thought it was pretty clever.
Close your eyes, I'd say to the girls, and imagine you're standing in front of a mirror, in the raw. There's no one else around you, just you. You're in your bedroom, and you can really look at yourself. I'd lead the discussion and call on girls to share. There were a lot of tears as people talked about their eyes, their hips, their noses, their biracial features they disapproved of, and other things they wanted to change. But strangely, that was the easy part. I'd then ask them to pick something they liked. I ran around the room, called on girls, and crickets. Finally, with some prompting, a few girls started to speak up. They liked their smile, or their eyes, or their hair when they rock a high ponytail. It was contagious, and more girls started to speak up. Just doing this started to heal so many of those negative thoughts they had, and you could feel the energy in the room lift as the girls jumped in to back each other up. I was giving myself major props. Wow, my girls were feeling better about themselves already. Full steam ahead. Rainbow, I said, turning to the next girl. Do you want to share the one thing you found that you love about yourself? No. Oh, you need more time? Oh, no problem. We can wait. No. I mean, I don't have anything. Oh, you don't want to share? If I had something to share, I would, but I can't find anything I love about myself. I started to feel my heart sinking down into my trail dirt-caked shoes. Even when I tried to prompt her by telling her what I saw, I think you have the most wonderful smile, and I know women in Hollywood would run someone over with a car to get cheekbones like yours. she wouldn't take the bait. She hated herself, from her hair to her toenails, and nothing the rest of us said could change her mind. I was crushed. Rainbow was the first, but she wouldn't be the last. And get this. She was a counselor. My jaw dropped when even more of our counselors, I'm talking women from 21 to 40 years old,